Thanks for tuning in. We have lots of things to talk about on this program. We spent a lot of time yesterday talking about Ground Zero, the mosque, and so on and so forth. I certainly don't want to get back into that, except for one little item here that came from Mark in Silicon Valley. That's what he says, Silicon Valley. Don't know where, but, you know, but he's got a thought for the day. He says, and this is kind of interesting, if for some reason the proposed so-called Ground Zero Mosque doesn't get built, I suggest that the old Gap store, which is where this would be built, be turned into something that really celebrates, or rather venerates, this country's true God, which is the almighty dollar. My idea? Turn it into a $9.11 store. A 9/11 store. Something that would, by the way, fit in nicely with all the low-rent commercial establishments in the area, like the head shops of Burger King and other fast food joints, strip clubs, etc., etc. Yes, Mark writes, think of all the 9/11 souvenirs one could get for $9.11. Mugs, flags, pennants, CDs, DVDs, photos, calendars, T-shirts, plastic World Trade Center models, piggy banks, snow globes, commemorative coins, Christmas ornaments, action figures. It is so American. And to commemorate America's response to 9/11, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, bobblehead dolls, model airplanes just like the ones used to carpet bomb Iraq, leaving 300,000 dead and 3 million homeless, bobbleheads of Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, plastic U.S. soldiers and Afghan Taliban, freedom fighters, create your own battlefield and live out your wildest fantasies. There's my idea! I'd make a killing. I would. And for just $2 million... the amount my old church owes me, I'll let you have it. Oh, well, but you know me. You learned free, so give free. I'm willing to let anyone use my idea so long as they give me credit. Grand Vizier Mark of Silicon Valley. Okay. He's probably right. And just one more thing. Angela writes, John Oliver says Muslims are allowed to put a mosque near Ground Zero, just like Catholics can build a church next to a playground. Yeah, you people are so sick. Talk about sick people. Oh, Dr. Laura finally bit her own ass off. That's just amazing. I mean, you talk about a contortionist, but she did. She reached around and bit her own ass off. She's going to get off the air. Maybe proof that there is a divine being somewhere. Robert says, Mike, I've listened to your show for years. Please don't lump all Christians together as you do. It does a great disservice to not know which tenets are being followed by different groups. Strive to be a cut above the milieu. Well, I'm not sure what that last line means, Robert, but I don't know how to not lump all Christians together. I mean, a Christian's a Christian by definition. There's certain things you all believe. I mean, some of you do more charity work than others. Some of you don't go out of your way to pee on somebody else's religion. But, I mean, what would you have me not do? You all believe in the same stuff. I mean, your own avatar of your own God said it, you know, I'm the way, the truth, the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. What does that mean? And all you Christians say, well, you must be born again to enter the kingdom of heaven. What you are saying, what do you mean don't lump you all together? You all believe the same stuff. If you are not of your faith, anyone who's not of your faith is condemned to everlasting hell. Period. Sorry. When I lump you all together, it's for a reason. Robert, it's because you all believe the same stuff. You do. I mean, there are little variations around the edges, but whatever. Okay. Murdoch. We mentioned this yesterday. News Corporation, controlled by Murdoch, has given $1 million to the Republican Governors Association. That donation makes News Corporation That's Fox News Channel and Hannity and Beck and the rest of these vermin. That makes News Corporation, the Republican Party's, or the Republican Governors Association, that group's single biggest corporate donor. That's according to Bloomberg News Service. Single biggest donor. Some people who are more awake than the rest of us acknowledge that News Corporation's contribution is evidence that that News Corp's $1 million donation to the Republican Governors Association underscores that television station's role as nothing more and nothing less than an appendage of the Republican Party. That's how Media Matters for America puts it. And they're absolutely right. They've been saying that for months, if not years. News Corp, or Fox News Channel, is the official mouthpiece for the Republicans. And the Republicans are the official butt boys for corporate America. I don't know why that's... should be a shock to anybody. Perhaps it isn't. A spokesperson for the Democratic National Committee, called the donation Fox and Funds. And the committee's national press secretary said in a statement, quote, "Fair and balanced," quote, "has been rendered utterly meaningless. Any pretense that may have existed about the ties between Fox and the Republican Party has been ripped violently away," end quote. Of course, Fox News maintains that its programs are objective. We are objective. So anyway, I'm giving you a news flash about this in the same manner that I would tell you, hey, a cool breeze is cool. Hey, water's wet. Hey, you know, stuff like that. Dr. Schlesinger. Laura, the woman who is... up to this point has been immune. She could say anything she wanted to, cause people to flee shrieking from her advice, quote. This is a physiologist giving a relationship and life and death advice to people who then sometimes go die and no one knows about it for weeks, like her mother. But Dr. Laura felt that she had license to use the N-word to a black woman married to a white man on her radio program the other day.
Oh, she could say anything she wants to. N-word.
And the reaction to that caused one of the Internet's favorite nude display chicks to say that she will end her radio show when her contract expires at the end of the year. I say, why wait? Why don't you quit now? You nasty fascist geek. She said one of the reasons she's quitting is, she said, quote, "I want to regain my First Amendment rights. I want to be able to say what's on my mind and in my heart and what I think is helpful and useful without somebody getting angry, some special interest group deciding that it's time to silence a voice of dissent and attack affiliates, attack sponsors. I'm sort of done with that," end quote. Well, my goodness. Supposing somebody got on television, Laura, and started, or on radio, and started streaming the K word about Jews, or talking about, oh, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I say, Laura, it's time to take the garbage out, and let's begin with you. I think that's a good starting point. Now, if we get rid of the rest of these pigs on right-wing radio and television, maybe the air in the country will clear a bit. We'll be right back.
out to Idiot America. Welcome to a new kind of sunshine.
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 21 past the hour. Before we get back to Dr. Laura, Prairie 2 writes in regarding the 9/11 store. The logo for the 9/11 store could feature George Bush's Uncle Sam saying, "Go shopping!" And Dick Cheney can get a job as a greeter so that he can get the health insurance. P.S. Don't cry for Dr. Laura. She'll put out a book and join the Klan rally tour with Sarah Palin. Unlimited corporate money is going to create a lot of openings with the 2012 election hate campaign that's already starting. Yeah, it is, isn't it? So Dr. Laura wants her First Amendment rights back. Now, of course, Dr. Laura should know better. I mean, she's a PhD, right? That the First Amendment has to do with the government telling you what you can and can't say as far as political speech. The government did not tell Dr. Laura that she couldn't use the N-word on the air. Dr. Laura can use any word she wants to on the air, right? She might get a fine if she uses toilet words or, you know, scatological terms. But the government didn't tell Dr. Laura not to use the N-word. Nobody did except people that it deeply hurt. But then Dr. Laura doesn't care too much about hurting anybody. As a matter of fact, I've always got the feeling, had the feeling, that Dr. Laura, in a different life, well, no, she's too old. Dr. Laura should have been cast in some of the movies about World War II. Towards the end of that conflict, the American film industry put out a lot of movies about the Nazis, and subsequent to World War II, when the truth of the death camps came out, I always had the feeling that she would have been cast perfectly. You talk about typecasting, in a slim Nazi uniform with a whip and a sidearm. I mean, she looks like that. No offense, Laura, but God, you do. You always have. Especially when you go on Larry King. Poor Jewish Larry King. And there sits Dr. Laura Schlesinger. We have asked Mr. King to make you disappear. I've always wanted to hear her do that. The controversy began when a caller to her show, a black woman married to a white man, said the woman said she was troubled by the fact that the white man ignored comments that were offensive to her when they were made by family and family members and friends. You know, here's a black woman that may have made a mistake in marrying this guy. She gets into a family situation, and the other family members, being the real sensitive pigs that they must be, use the N-word. You can imagine how some of those conversations went, right? Here's this woman trying to be married to a man that I guess at one time she loved. Maybe she still loves, but the family members are all walking around doing the N-word. So she asked her husband, according to the transcript of the phone call with Dr. Laura, she asked her husband to stop, you know, because you tell people to stop. It's hurting me. So Dr. Laura said to the caller, "Well, I don't think the use of the N-word is racist. But I'm Dr. Laura. I should know. I don't think it is. Black guys use it all the time," she said. "Turn on HBO. Listen to a black comic. All you hear is N-word, N-word, N-word." She also said, "Without giving much thought, a lot of blacks voted for Obama simply because he was half black." Huh? Oh, my God. This is what we have in this country, isn't it, huh? She went on Larry King Live last night and said, "Well, I'm just not going to renew my contract.
I want to be able to say the N-word anytime I want to. I'm going to start an internet show. I will say anything I want to say. My first... Beep, 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 boop, boop, beep, beep, beep. Oh, and she told Kang, tell me this doesn't sound familiar. This is so Sarah Palin. She told Kang, I'm not quitting. Even though I'm quitting, I'm not quitting. I feel energized, stronger, and freer to say the things that I believe need to be said for people in this country. Like the N-word. God. Media Matters for America, President Eric Burns issued the following statement. I guess we'll have time to share it with you because we're just about ready for a break here. But the statement is, Dr. Laura's radio career ended in disgrace tonight because of the bigoted, ugly, and hateful remarks made on her show. Americans have had enough. Listeners are now holding hosts, affiliates, and sponsors accountable for the offensive and inexcusable content on the airwaves. End quote. Well, Eric, that's a little bit over the top, because if that were true, the airwaves would be cleaned of this right-wing garbage by sundown tonight. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Before
the hour, a little more on Dr. Laura's rant. This is from Mary Curtis, Dr. Mary C. Curtis, who is a national correspondent for Politics Daily. And she writes under the headline, Dr. Laura's rant on race begs the question, just who needs a doctor? That's true. Some of the things that Mary Curtis wrote, she writes, professional to professional, Dr. Laura, let Dr. Mary explain why, as offensive as it was, saying the N-word is the least of your problems. A young black woman calls into your show to get some actual advice about a specific problem. Her white husband's family and friends insult her using racist terms and epithets. She said to you, quote, my husband ignored these comments and it hurts my feelings, end quote. So, of course, Dr. Laura, you start talking about President Obama. You said, quote, without giving much thought, a lot of black folks voted for Obama simply because he was half black. Didn't matter what he was going to do in office. It was a black thing. You got to know that, end quote. Let me pause from Dr. Mary Curtis's little column here. Laura Schlesinger talking about what black people think, feel, know, understand, comprehend, or don't is like me trying to put myself into the mind of Hasidic Jews living somewhere in a desert community in, pick a country. Dr. Laura's, and this is true with most of these right-wingers on radio and television, their arrogance that they know what fill-in-the-blank is thinking. And it's always groupthink. They know what all blanks are thinking. They know why all blanks
act or react the way they do. There's something about that kind of Caucasian superiority that even bothers me. Because she is part of my racial tribe, and I'd like to kick her ass out, frankly. I'd like to give her green polka dots and make her go live with the frogs that have green polka dots. But that kind of arrogance on the part of white people, I don't know. I guess other racial groups or ethnic groups do it, too. But white people have so dominated so much of the globe for so much of the planet's history that it's just, you'd think by this point that these poor ignorant whites like Dr. Laura would understand that being Caucasian does not make her all-knowing. It doesn't make her able to enter into the psyches and minds and hearts and spirits of people who are not a kind of wrinkled Caucasian like she is. You know, it's just... But I digress. I digress. Dr. Mary Curtis says, not only do you ignore the caller and change the subject to get something that's obviously on your mind and in your heart, Dr. Laura, but you also insist you know the motivation of millions of black voters. It's not the first time I've heard this ridiculous canard that black people voted for the president simply on skin color. It assumes that only voters who aren't African Americans use logic, reasoning, and rational thought. Like Republicans. Before reaching a conclusion. Maybe, Dr. Mary writes, just maybe, most African-American voters preferred the policies in the Democratic Party's platform. Did they vote overwhelmingly for Bill Clinton because they liked his smile? Did Al Gore, another popular candidate with black voters, wave shiny beads before their faces to mesmerize them? And, of course, Dr. Laura fails to mention that others might have voted against Obama for the same reason. Then Dr. Laura said on her program, quote, we've got a black man as president, and we have more complaining about racism than ever. I mean, I think that's hilarious. End quote. Dr. Mary writes, yes, Dr. Laura, a black man is in the White House, so black folks should stop complaining when people call them names, ridicule them, and discriminate against them. Like you, Dr. Laura, I just can't stop laughing. And once you get that out of your system, you return to the young woman who called in, who asks what you, as a advice maven, think about the N-word. And we know what Dr. Laura unloaded with then. Dr. Mary says, you don't seem to understand why people are shocked and disgusted by your behavior. Perhaps it's time for a history lesson. This is the word that people with ropes used as they lynched men and women for an afternoon's entertainment. This is the word craven politicians shouted to stoke racial fear. This word has been used as background music to terror, which someone of your age and education must know. Yet you, Dr. Laura, are upset that this is one word that you cannot utter. For more reasons why, I recommend you listen to the anti-racist writer and activist Tim Weiss, who says in response to that very question that, quote, as a white person, I will not bear the consequences of whatever decision black folks make about when, if, and how to use that word, end quote. Wise asks, quote, the history of that word in the mouths of white people is not a mixed history. History shows there's a double standard. History has been a double standard. So, Dr. Laura, maybe you better get over it, the fact that you can't use the N-word. Huh? What do you think? Dr. Mary says, most black people I know hate that word and never use it. The NAACP, which you managed to turn into a derogatory verb during your rant, nice trick that, by the way, symbolically buried the N-word several years ago, so corrosive is its power. The late, great Richard Pryor, an early practitioner in his comedy routines, stopped using it after a trip to Africa. He said, quote, "To this day, I wish I'd never said the word. I felt its lameness. It was misunderstood by people. They didn't get what I was talking about. Neither did I. So I vowed never to say it again," end quote. So in the face of all this evidence, I wonder, Dr. Laura, how you've come to the conclusion that comedians on R-rated cable television shows set the tone for polite interaction between the races. How many doctors and lawyers of any color, how many grocery clerks, teachers, and nurses have you heard using the words you just used on the radio? Just who are you hanging out with? On second thought, Dr. Laura, I don't think I want to know. Yeah, and there's more. Mary Curtis, national correspondent, Politics Daily on AOL.com. You can check out her whole column if you want to. I am so sick, though, truly sick, of seeing somebody who paints herself as an advice giver on radio. She has for 30 years. Always whining that she's the victim. Oh, they got on her because she let her mother's corpse rot in her mother's house for 2 weeks before she even realized her mother was dead. They got on her because her son turned out to be some kind of a war-eating psychopath once he got in the military. Oh, they got on her because 35 years ago, her boyfriend took a lot of spread shots, if you know what I mean, of naked Dr. Laura, and they wound up on the internet. Oh, everybody always picks on poor Dr. Laura, and now they've taken away her First Amendment right, all these people have, to use the N-word on national radio. Oh, you poor thing, Dr. Laura. Will the abuse against you never end? How have you managed to survive and thrive and become immensely wealthy, being such a victim? Poor Dr. Laura. Always they pick on you. Always they come after you. Always they harass you. Right, Dr. Laura? Well, I wish there was a word that I could use for you, Dr. Laura, but I guess there isn't. Except to say you're a phony. You are, you always have been. So maybe you can join, like Prairie 2 suggested, join the Sarah Palin KKK tour this fall and let the bobble-headed American voters of all races and creeds and beliefs and colors understand fully how mistreated you have been over your long career as a radio star. Poor baby.
Dreaming away, wishing that heroes they truly exist. I cry watching the days. Can't you see I'm a fool in so many ways? But you, oh, my sentence is that it's just so pretty. Pretty, oh, I did it again.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Article in this morning's New York Times about Sharon Angle, the really crazy person who is a teabagger, and she wants to unseat a really, 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 really ineffective Democratic senator from Nevada, Harry Reid, the Democratic majority leader in the Senate. From actually being ahead in some of the polls of Harry Reid, now apparently this contest that should have been a cakewalk for somebody with Harry Reid's experience is now a dead heat, according to the latest polls, which is bad news for Sharon Angle, I guess. One of the Republicans in the primary who lost to Ms. Angle said, quote, Harry Reid had no chance to win before she was nominated. He has a shot to win now. He could still lose, but I have to say he's favored in Nevada. Well, this is a woman who has embraced getting rid of Social Security. Just on and on and on. She really is a psychopath. She doesn't belong in a political system or a social system like ours. She doesn't. She belongs someplace where things are run on a more theocratic or dictatorial level, where social Darwinism prevails, where if somebody can't make it, they can just go by the side of the road and die. That's where Sharon Angle belongs, and she might win public office in a place like that. She might win public office in Nevada if enough people believe that Sharon Angle represents the kind of protest vote they want to cast. The National Republicans don't know what to do about her. They've suggested she change some of her tactics. She's a very ignorant woman. Aside from the craziness of her positions, she's extremely ignorant, like most teabagger candidates are. Most teabaggers are. But Sharon Angle is kind of the sine qua non where it concerns stupid teabagger candidates. I don't talk about her a lot because I see these people as just being really kind of, I see them the same way I see cockroaches. And here in the South, we have a lot of cockroaches. Things that operate, that they don't create anything except more cockroaches. You know, they feed on the detritus of people and, you know, they scurry around and they're very scurry-ish. You know, I don't know how to describe cockroaches, except Ron Paul reminds me of the same. So does Sarah Palin. So does Sharon Angle. So does Michelle Bachmann. So does, all these people. They just, to me, they remind me of cockroaches. And they don't belong in our political or social system. They really don't. They belong someplace where it's more heavy-handed, rule by fiat and not rule by constitutional government. But on the other hand, if Harry Reid gets his ass kicked, I probably will kind of chuckle and be glad to see it happen. I really will, because you know why? Because Harry Reid is one of those Democrats that I despise. The Republicans always play to their base, the psychotic extreme right, Christian conservative, blood-drenched, war-making base of the Republican Party. That's who Newt Gingrich plays to. That's how he got the Republican Revolution in 1994. That's who Palin plays to. It's who Beck and all the rest of these pigs play to. They play to their base. And the base takes the Republican Party wherever the base wants it to go. The Democrats, on the other hand, the base of the Democratic Party is compassionate, concerned about everybody, believes in equality and justice under the law, believes that economic policy should benefit everybody, not just the top one half of 1%. And Harry Reid doesn't, and a lot of Democrats do not play to that base. They go to the corporate Democrat, the dino, the Democrat in name only base or part of the Democratic Party. And, you know, I've always been kind of jealous, to be honest, of the the focus in the Republican Party. The Republican Party knows it's crazy. It knows it's anti-life. It knows it's pro-war and pro-death. It knows it is a party of elites controlling, a very small amount of elites controlling the vast majority of everybody. It knows all this. It understands itself. We are the party of American fascism. And they select their spokespersons to represent that. They play to that base. They know who they are. They know what they're about. They know they're deceptive. They know they're liars. They know they cheat, steal, and do anything to corrupt the American system. They know that. And so they play to that. They're very honest about it. Democrats, on the other hand, the Democratic Party, which is the party of justice, doesn't do that. The Democratic Party tries to be filthy, stinking Republican light. So, in a sense, there's a part of me, a little perverse part of me, that if you're a regular listener to this program, you know about it. You know it's there. Would like to see these Democrats in name only be bloodied this election cycle by the fascists. And maybe that would teach other Democrats, if the other Democrats ever had a chance to get into power again, maybe it would teach other Democrats, you better play to your base. You better stick to those values, justice, honesty, decency, and truth that the Democratic Party represents, and stay away from the toxic waste dump that is Republicanism. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We have a missive today from Prairie 2, as we do periodically. Being off last Friday and this past Monday because of the gig in Seattle, we missed a couple of prime opportunities where it concerns Prairie 2's writing. So let me share with you. Excuse me, what he sent in late last night. The big news to come out this past Monday morning, Beijing time, was that China's economy skipped past Japan's in the second quarter, becoming the world's second largest. The Japanese economy is valued at about $1.28 trillion, slightly below China's figure of $1.33 trillion. The gross domestic product of the United States was roughly $3.5 trillion for the quarter. These numbers are subject to interpretation, however. For example, if you adjusted China's currency up 40% to bring it in line with the U.S. dollar, it would put their gross domestic product at about $2.5 trillion. And you knock about 20% off the U.S. economy for the non-productive financial services industry that brings the U.S. down to $2.8 trillion. That still leaves the United States ahead of China, but not by much. Consumer spending in China only accounts for 35% of their economy. And with 70% of the U.S. economy based on giving each other haircuts and serving fries with that, is the U.S. still ahead? China does have perhaps four times the population of the U.S., so you could still say it's comparing apples and mandarin oranges, since they have some 700 people still living in abject, 700 million people still living in abject poverty. The poor in China have one thing the poor in the United States don't have: real hope for the future. China creates new middle-class people by the millions every year. The U.S. is creating new poor people by the millions every year. China is creating new millionaires every day. The U.S. is making billionaires richer as they create new poor people. China is building skyscrapers at such a rate that it has half of all the tall construction cranes in the entire world. And they consume 40% of all the world's steel and concrete every year. They are building major projects, bigger than anything the United States has ever done, even before Reagan took the economy offline. It took China just 3 years to build a 230-mile-per-hour bullet train that goes the equivalent of the distance from New York to Chicago in an hour. Obama barely got funding through Congress to start building what he calls a high-speed train running from Chicago to St. Louis, a fraction of the distance, that might reach 90 miles an hour, a train speed not seen in the United States since 1950. There are few economists anymore that don't see China passing the U.S. to become the dominant superpower. They just can't agree on the time required. The popular press likes the 20-year estimate, but some say just 10 years. And others point out that China will begin its 12th five-year plan next year, and they will probably set goals that will put them ahead of the United States. This is without taking into account how far the United States will have declined by then. For you fans of Reaganomics and the, quote, new American century, end quote, this is your Mandarin lesson to help you prepare for that new century. To say stop when in a vehicle, say ting zhe. To someone on foot that you want to stop, simply say zhang zhu. But if you hear le sheng, that means halt, as it's used by the military. You might even want to raise your hands. PrairieNumeral2.com. Oy vey, that's not Chinese. Oh, by the way, the number here, if you want to call in, please do. 877-99-MALLOY. What is that? 877 996-2556. Okay, 877-996-2556. We'll take some calls if you want to. I don't know why you would, though. This program is so damned entertaining without phone calls. August 28th. What's the date today? The 18th? 10 days. August 28th will mark the 47th anniversary of Martin Luther King's Poor People's Rally, looking for jobs and justice. It's the rally where hundreds of thousands turned out to hear Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. However, the occasion will be marked, the 47th anniversary, the occasion will be marked by this freakish, sick, potential suicide, Glenn Beck, who is the brains behind the teabaggers. The event is a rally for Beck and his thugs, and it is being called Restoring Honor, the Restoring Honor Rally. There's one way to restore honor in this country, and that would be for every single Republican on that day, every single teabagger, every single right-winger to do the honorable thing. If they want to restore honor, adopt the Japanese ritual of harakiri and proceed. Anyway, at this event, Beck will present.
He's going to present
his 100-year plan for America. Where did the guy get balls the size of Mount Rushmore? Where does this 100-year plan for America, a punkish-ass, illiterate, functional freak like Glenn Beck, is going to have a 100-year plan for America? A guy who's semi-literate? Well, this would be fun. Oh, I don't mean he shouldn't do it. I can't wait to see the coverage. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Laura will wind up on Fox News, so don't worry about it. I can't wait to see it. Also on the stage with him will be Sarah Palin. Beck says that whites don't own the legacy of Abraham Lincoln, and that blacks don't own Martin Luther King. Doctor, Reverend, Junior. Well, Glenn, it just blows over your head. You have your head so far up one of your body orifices, it's not for me to suggest to you, you half-wit, that Dr. King never claimed, nor has any black American, as far as I know, that only black Americans own Dr. King. As a matter of fact, black Americans have been begging, pleading, wishing, and hoping that white America would understand what Dr. King was talking about and operate within Dr. King's dream. So, Glenn, as usual, you misstate the case so that your brain-dead followers can relate. Have I mentioned yet this today, Glenn Beck, how much I hate you? Have I? I mean, I really, really do. We'll be right back.
People are gonna rise up and take what's there.
There, you freak, and make your I think that was me, 21 past the hour. Tim from LA writes, Mike, harakiri. Or seppuku, the proper term, is an honorable ritual to end the shame brought upon the family and or the people of Japan. I don't know if Glenn Beck and his Republican conservative teabaggers would ever bring honor to the U.S. So I would recommend these pro-Second Amendment morons shoot themselves. Seppuku is too honorable for them. Okay. I didn't know seppuku was the proper. Where was I? Glenn Beck has asserted that blacks don't own Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., which is an interesting statement from Glenn Beck because as far as Glenn Beck is concerned and these right-wingers, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated about 2 or 3 years beyond the point when he should have been. Glenn Beck's mocking of Dr. King is almost too much to handle. Everything about this guy is disgusting. Everything about Glenn Beck is nausea-producing. But this is take a little bit too far. A struggle in this country that went on for 350 years and actually culminated with the assassination of Dr. King, not with the passing of legislation prior to his death. But it never fails to cause me some sort of emotion. I don't know what it is when I hear white people trying to explain Dr. King to other white people. Now, I'm not saying that white folks can't get an intellectual handle on what Dr. King's philosophy was about. Philosophy is philosophy. It doesn't make any difference to skin color. But for whites to think that they can emotionally or viscerally interpret for other whites what Dr. King was about and the passion behind his words, to me, is I've always found that offensive. Now comes Glenn Beck. You know, let me back up. To me, being a white person, my role where it concerns Dr. King, or my function, is to shut up and listen. To shut up and let people explain to me what Dr. King was about, and then hope that I can connect to what he said. And I know two, I know his two sons, which doesn't mean anything. His kids are a wreck. But anyway, I digress. So here, Glenn Beck, and he wants everybody to believe that his urination on Dr. King's legacy was originally planned for Sunday, September 12th. But he claims he changed the date because, quote, he was not going to ask anyone to work on the Sabbath. End quote. Oh, Glenn, you're so righteous. You are so righteous. You're not going to ask anyone to work on the Sabbath. When one of his staff members informed him of the significance of August 28th, the day that Beck says he just randomly picked, he just let his mind float out of his skull and randomly picked, I know, August 28th. That'll be good. Not September 20th. August 28th. When one of his staff said, but that's the day of, Beck says he thought the coincidence was, quote, divine providence, end quote. That's another thing. Sharon Angle's the same way. All these right-wingers, God talks to them. God tells them what to do. God tells them where to congregate and where to hold their rallies. And on what day God does. Civil rights leaders have decried the timing of the rally. National Urban League President Mark Morial called the so-called Restoring Honor event an effort to embarrass and poke a finger in the eye of the civil rights community because Glenn Beck and his public utterances don't necessarily demonstrate a consistency with the vision of King. End quote, Mark Morial, Urban League president. You don't think so, Mark? You don't think Glenn and the teabaggers and the rest of these rat bastards represent the legacy of Dr. King? You know what? I think you're right, Mark. I think you're right. So Al Sharpton and several other civil rights organizations, including Marty King, Martin Luther King III, are planning what they're calling a Reclaim the Dream March, the same day as Beck's rally. Their event will begin at Washington's Dunbar High School and end at the future site of the MLK Memorial. More on this when we come back.
You know I ain't gonna let you shoot my big Navy gun. Got my long government letters, my time to go. When I got to the army, found the same old Jim Crow. Uncle Sam says, two camps for black and white. But when trouble starts, we'll all be in that same big fight.
against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Bruce writes in, Dr. King should really mean more to white people, in a sense, since what he did was all about changing white people's beliefs and attitudes. Black folks didn't need to change. Just stand up. Yeah. Well, again, when a piece of human waste, and a very ignorant piece of human waste like a Glenn Beck, decides to explain to other brain-dead white people what Dr. King really meant, that's when, you know, that... That's when, once again, that line between sanity and psychopathology is crossed. And that's what Beck does. Anyway, there will be a counter event. The march will begin at D.C.'s Dunbar High School and end at the future site of the MLK Jr. Memorial. Press release for the march describes, quote, the Tea Party and allied conservatives as trying to break the crux of what the civil rights movement symbolized and what Dr. King fought and literally died for, end quote. But Al Sharpton, who's going to be there, was quick to say the event was not a countermarch or confrontation with Beck. Sharpton said, quote, at no point will we interchange with Beck and his supporters. We will not desecrate the march and what King stood for, end quote. Now, what about the assertion? And it's amazing to me. It's always these arrogant neo-fascist white people who borrow from Lincoln, who borrow from King, who borrow from historic culture. Cultural personifications of the black struggle and try to use it. They distort it. And the ways they distort it is, are subtle. This has been going on for quite some time. You know, demands for justice and equality by white folks where it concerns their competition with blacks is almost laughable, except for the fact that white people, when they hear that kind of twisted and perverted rhetoric, buy into it. Buy into it. But Beck's assertion that the Tea Party, the Teabaggers, have as much right to King's legacy as anyone else. Garrett Epps, a University of Baltimore Law School professor, said, quote, I think the embrace of King is a real problem for people like Glenn Beck, because King was a very powerful moral and political figure, end quote, and one that doesn't fit into the teabagger rhetoric. You know, Dr. King stood for morality. He didn't stand for it. He preached it. He talked it. He walked it. He breathed it. Morality in the larger sense, the morality of a culture, a society. And don't forget, he wasn't assassinated until he identified the United States as the single biggest exporter of terror on Earth and militarism and war and death and destruction, which is absolutely the truth. But in so many instances, the people who bring big truths are usually the people who are shot dead or drowned or hanged or lynched or done away with as quickly as possible. Professor Epps does argue that Beck presents a revisionist history that allows ultra-conservatives like Beck a seat at the table of brotherhood that King memorialized in his speech. This is where the white racist bastards always come out on top. Glenn Beck and his bobblehead followers are no more interested in racial justice than they're interested in cutting their own throats. But they steal the language of human rights. They steal the language of equal justice under the law. Beck and his teabaggers hate any person or group of persons unlike them. Instantly, upon seeing them on the street, instant hatred. I hate blacks. I hate Jews. I hate Muslims. I hate brown people. I hate black people. I hate this group. I hate that group because they're not middle-aged white people. Conservative. Christian. So, to say that Beck deserves a seat at the table is not for me to say at all because I am not capable as a Caucasian to truly, viscerally understand what Dr. King said. I can get it up here in my head, but I can't get it down here in my gut. I can't. I can translate it from my head to my heart and try to live that way, but I will always fail. My hope is that my failure rate lessens as I learn more. But Beck has said that far too many people have either gotten just lazy or they have purposely distorted Dr. King's ideas of judge a man by the content of his character. Oh, you bastard. Oh, you rat bastard, Glenn. You are judged by the content of your character every time you open your pie hole and go on Fox Propaganda Network and distort any truth that you can get your weird mind around. Judge a man by the content of his character. When do you suppose Glenn Beck has ever done that? But he doesn't even do that in his own family. But to hear a person like Beck, who understands fully what he is going, he is trying to provoke. What Beck wants on August 28th is a race war. He wants blacks and whites to begin killing each other at his feet. He wants to stand up there with that militaristic neo-Nazi attitude and appearance that he so easily exhibits. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him wear a long sleeve shirt with an armband and a black tie. We'll see. But what Beck wants on that day is mayhem, blood, and gore. And I don't mean Al Gore. He wants to see violence. That's what he is trying to provoke. This is what Beck has been trying to provoke ever since before Barack Obama was elected president. In calling Obama a racist, in pouring fire or alcohol on this fiery kind of bigotry and ignorance that defines the teabagger, Beck has been hoping and pushing and probing and prodding, trying to get people to take up guns and kill each other. He wants it. He wants it desperately because Beck understands a very essential truth about himself. That no matter how much money he has or how many books he writes or how many stations he's on or how much television, how many people watch the television program, he will always, always, always be a complete loser. Totally. You know, he can stand in front of his chalkboard and rail and preach and bitch and froth and foam, but it means nothing. And Beck understands that. His followers don't. You know, his followers believe they found a perfect master. And, you know, in order to find a perfect master, you've got to be willing to be a perfect slave. And that's what his followers have done. So they look at Beck as like, oh, my God. Oh, Glenn, you speak such essential truths. Oh, I would die for you. Yes, you will. This is what Beck is hoping for. This is what any demagogue prays for. And they do pray that their appearance will ignite the crowd to such a degree that anyone who comes near this collection of madness will be devoured, consumed, attacked, ripped to pieces. This is what any demagogue hopes for, whether it is a third-rate demagogue like Glenn Beck or the demagogue of all demagogues, Adolf Hitler. It doesn't make any difference. It's a matter of degrees. What they want destruction, violence, death, so that Beck can rise above it, can actually levitate and float. Oh, oh, my people, I understand you're only struggling for real justice, just like Dr. King did all those years ago. And here we're gathered. Oh, look at the blood. Oh. Oh, look at the violence over there. Oh, my goodness, here's a group shooting each other. What's this? A stomping. Oh, my children. Oh, purify, hallow this spot, bleed. You know, that sort of thing. You've seen it before on the Leni Riefenstahl films. You've seen it.
And they say the Midwest is in great distress, and NASA blew up the moon. The ozone layer has no ozone anymore, and you're gonna leave me for the guy next door. I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you. They arrested the mayor for an illegal favor, sold the Empire State to Japan. And Oliver North married William C. Corden, gave birth to little Tehran. And the Ayatollah aboard a nuclear warship, if he dies, he wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some human waste.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Where are we? There's someplace in here. I don't know. I was talking about this disgusting Beck character, I guess. Oh, well. Did you see the article at MarketWatch about, well, actually it's a book out by David Stockman. Remember him? Remember David Stockman? He was Ronald Reagan's budget director. Do you remember this guy who had his conversion on the road to Damascus several years ago after he had been instrumental in setting the U.S. on economic policy guaranteed to destroy the entire country? He, you know, had that moment of deep, deep regret about what he did. In a recent New York Times op-ed piece, he wrote about how he writes, quote, how my GOP destroyed the U.S. economy. End quote. How my GOP destroyed, not is destroying, but destroyed. And he says that it is setting up an American apocalypse. Paul Farrell, writing at MarketWatch, who is, you know, quotes liberally from what Stockman wrote, he points out that David Stockman has said that job recovery in this country right now could take years, if not decades. I mean, we really are in for a rough ride. Stockman is equally damning of the Democrats' Keynesian policies, but what this indictment by a party insider, someone so close, if not one of the architects of the Reaganomics ideology, what this indictment says about America, according to Paul Farrell, helps us better understand how America's toxic partisan politics, holy war, is destroying not just the economy and capitalism, but the American dream. And as Farrell says, unless this war stops soon, both parties will succeed in their collective death wish. I think Farrell's full of hog snot. The Democrats are not out. Rank-and-file Democrats are not about a death wish. Democrats, I'm not talking about the party leadership or some of the leading lights of the party. I'm talking about people who still maintain a Democratic party kind of mindset. What we're about is justice under the law, economic justice as well as social justice, equality of opportunity, whether it's in education or employment, whatever it is. But Farrell says, why should we focus on David Stockman's message now? It's already lost in the 24/7 news cycle. Why? Well, we need some introspection. Ask yourself, how did the great nation of America lose its moral compass and drift so far off course to where our very survival is threatened? Well, mommy, probably started with, not started, but was certainly encouraged by Reaganomics, don't you think? Farrell writes, we've arrived at an historic turning point as a nation that no longer needs outside enemies to destroy us. We are committing suicide. Democracy, capitalism, the American dream, all dying. Why? Because of the economic decisions of the Republicans the past 40 years, says David Stockman, a leading Reagan Republican. Oh, my goodness. Stockman says the Republican Party should file for bankruptcy. Yeah, well, I would hope so. They were morally bankrupt a long time ago, and now they're bankrupting the country. Stockman says, quote, if there were such a thing as Chapter 11 for politicians, the Republican push to extend the unaffordable Bush tax cuts would amount to a bankruptcy filing. The nation's public debt will soon reach $18 trillion. He says our situation screams out for austerity and sacrifice, but instead the Republicans insist that the nation's wealthiest taxpayers be spared even a 3 percentage point rate increase. That's right. The Republicans, it's not the Democrats, folks. The Democrats are incompetent. They're bedwetters, thumbsuckers, hair twisters, cowards. Two Democrats, they are just weak-kneed. But it's Republicans who are wielding the swords to slice everything to pieces. And they're doing a good job of it. David Stockman says, quote, Republicans used to believe that prosperity depended upon the regular balancing of accounts in government, in international trade, on the ledgers of central banks, and in the financial affairs of private households and businesses too, end quote. But not any longer. Not any longer. Today, there's a new catechism that's little more than money, printing, and deficit finance, vulgar Keynesianism, robed in the ideological vestments of the prosperous classes, making a mockery of Republican ideals. Republican ideals have backfired, crippling the economy. Crippling. It's a rather lengthy argument. You can find it at marketwatch.com or marketwatch.org. I don't know if you want to read it, Paul Farrell. But in reading it this morning over in breakfast oatmeal, the reason it was intriguing to me is because it was written by one of the architects of the destruction, the economic and working class, middle class destruction of this country, David Stockman. And it's always nice to see people have their conversions, to go from being abject sinners to being pious, almost priest-like. I know. But Stockman, who was one of the, if not the architect of the destruction, economic destruction of this country, to see him screech and whine and bleed about his mea culpas, somehow it just grates. It's not a relief. It's just grating. We'll be back. It's 7 past the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. I don't say it enough. That's the reason I can't remember. 877-996-2556. We'd like to hear from you now. 877-996-2556. My favorite writer, the best newspaper writer in America, and I'm sorry if that's an offense to your guy at the Miami Herald, Hyacin. What's his first name? Carl. He's good, too. But Mark Morford of the Chronicle is, San Francisco Chronicle, is the best writer on earth where it concerns the political column format. He really is. Thank God, he writes, global warming is a hoax. I got to share this with you. I mean, right, you know? Because, gosh, Jesus, in angry apocalyptic heaven, wouldn't it be just terrible if all this stuff were true about global warming? Wouldn't it be horrible if all this stunning, insanely mounting, irrefutable evidence, death, floods, fires, heat waves, the worst this and the most violent that in 1,000 years, were some sort of surefire cumulative sign that we have, if not directly caused, then wildly accelerated and amplified the imminent implosion of this planet? But we didn't, and we haven't, and we aren't. I mean, whew, right? I'm delighted to remember that hardcore science has lied, misguided, misnomered, and whatever else weird science does to confuse the world about the real impact humanity has had on global ecosystems. All those thousands of highly trained scientists educated at the finest universities, learning the most difficult and fraught information of our age, all in universal agreement that humankind's actions directly affect climate change, and they are all totally full of it because they are clearly in cahoots with Nazi liberal Jesus, the solar panel manufacturers, and the hippies who want to compost my Kentucky Fried Chicken Double Down wrapper. I am delighted to be reassured by the fringe right wing that the piles of dead bodies, millions of lost homes, and even the very sun itself are part of a vast conspiracy, a plot to form an evil one-world government, a lefty liberal charade, even in places that don't understand or care what the hell a liberal is. See? Do you understand how powerful the lie about global warming? Amazing! Amazing! Because otherwise, wow, what sort of hell is this? Pakistan, Russia, China, Greenland, Niger, and on it goes. Unprecedented heat waves, scorched crops, giant icebergs, savage droughts, dire emergencies, thousands of dead here and 10,000 more over there, and nothing like these events in the history of the world ever. Even the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is in on it, coming back from Pakistan, stunned and shaken by the epic flooding he witnessed there. He said, quote, the magnitude of the problem, the world has never seen such a disaster. It's much beyond anybody's imagination. End quote, putting out the urgent call for more international aid. I mean, sure, global warming is happening. Even some of the more ignorant climate change deniers have had to reverse course on that. But humanity had nothing to do with it, okay? We don't need to change our behavior one iota. If God wants another ice age or whatever, who are we to argue? Heathen book learners and their ridiculous studies. That's who. Scientists are saying that all these severe weather patterns fit in exactly with what they've been predicting all along. Not only that, but they say it's increasingly likely that we've waited too long to change our behaviors, cut emissions, reduce consumption, and other such liberal gibberish. And now it might be too late to do anything about it. Increasingly extreme violent weather will now be the norm, and the devastation, disease, and death will only increase. But good news, if I blink a few times while clicking the mouse, it all goes away. Hey, look, Lindsay Lohan's mom is all up in it. Hey, look, Snooki is so wasted.
All is as it should be. Thank you, interweb. But damn it, their godless eco-agenda just won't stop. 2010, they say, is not being very nice. It's setting all sorts of unpleasant records. Already the most extreme national heat records in a single year. 17 of them. Already the hottest half year on record in planetary history. Already the 5 warmest months in tropical Atlantic history, possibly resulting in more hurricanes. Already millions of people sensing deep down that something is very wrong indeed. Good thing their calmly intuitive souls are full of crap, right? None of this is happening. I mean, please, isn't it like this every year? Always with the floods and fires, always with the hurricanes and the earthquakes and numbing body counts. In this year, is this year, this decade really that different? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I just turned up this Glenn Beck podcast. I can't hear you. Here's your big lesson. Do not listen to people who actually know things. Only listen to people who react negatively and whiningly to people who actually know things. That's the American way. Have you seen the photos from the Gulf of Mexico? All shiny and clear now, thanks to toxic chemical dispersants, the miracle of ocean currents, and armies of PR people who smell like hate. What happened to all the oil? It's all gone, even though it's really not. Absorbed into the planetary bloodstream like magic. Even the president is there, splashing around in waters that not a month ago had hundreds of millions of gallons of crude oil and chemicals floating in it. Just more proof that God's favorite creatures can cause no lasting harm. We're innocent as pie and guns. And corrects at 9,500. I'm dumping some used motor oil into this city sewer right now. Look, in celebration. I just read the flooding in Pakistan has already caused more devastation than the 2004 tsunami in Asia, worse than the Haiti earthquake. One quarter of that country is underwater. They say Pakistan also just broke a record for the single highest temperature ever recorded on the Asian continent. 128 degrees. Oh, by the way, 16 other nations also met or broke heat records this year, too. That record was set in a city, 128 degrees in a city where people live. But not for very much longer because they do not have giant air conditioners and pallets of Fiji water from Costco like we do, so they probably won't survive. Yes, it's tragic. It's unprecedented. It's never happened like this before. Heck, even here in the eco-terrorist homeland of San Francisco, they say the change in ocean temperatures will soon mean Fog City will be entirely fog-bound, edge-to-edge, nearly year-round. But I repeat, it's not our fault. 7 billion rapacious industrialized bipeds had the impact of a feather. All this destruction and death, it's just God's will. Except for those places that don't believe in a Christian God. Serves them right, doesn't it? By the way, there's an obvious solution to many of these horrors, to the Russian heat waves, the violent droughts in Niger, the dead bodies floating in Pakistan, the floods in China. Don't go there. Don't go to these terrible, hot, messy places. It's so easy. I mean, so what if giant icebergs 4 times the size of Manhattan are suddenly breaking off in Greenland? That's happening way, way up there. I'm over-consuming energy and blocking out inconvenient truths way, way down here. There's no cause-effect, no connection whatsoever. Never mind that dark, nagging sense of self-wrought doom deep in my bones. I know that's just a liberal lie, an implant, completely futile, just like those failed climate talks in Copenhagen and the soon-to-be-failed ones coming up shortly in Mexico. I mean, woo!
ammunition against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Copy of the Japan Times here in front of me. The article is about the heat stroke death toll in that island nation. Since the end of May, almost 32,000 people have been rushed to hospitals with heat stroke. Death toll is 132. These are record highs for this sort of thing. August is seeing a continued high occurrence of heat stroke. Wow. You know, the Mark Morford's column is so excellent, as it always is. Always. I've never read anything that Mark Morford has written that halfway through it, I thought, oh, where's the end of this? Usually halfway through it, I say, oh, my God, this is so good. And I look down, oh, my God, there's the end. No, keep going. Keep writing, Mark. It is such good good writing. It's astonishing. It's M-O-R-F-O-R-D, Mark Morford. I know a lot of you are familiar with his writing, but you should just do a Google on him and read anything and everything he's ever written. The global climate change thing, though, is something that is just. I mean, I understand denial and avoidance when you're faced with the very survival of your species. It's very difficult to look at what's going on and say to oneself, oh, my God, something has to be done now, but how do I notify the other 6 billion of me on this planet? I mean, what can I do? Oh, my God, let me just go up to my air-conditioned bedroom and pull the blankets over my head. I get that. I do. I get that. I get that. This is where one has to have something called, wait for it, leadership. That's right, leadership. Yeah, this is where it's necessary to have leadership in each country and leadership that connects globally. Leadership that says, all right, listen, it's time to stop listening to the fantasists, you know, the religious crazy people. It's time to stop listening to the deniers. It's time to understand what we are facing as a species, as a family. Ooh, never mind. That sounds, the Glenn Beck would tell you to run from that word family. Run! Anytime you hear that word, it's a liberal plot. They're trying to raise your taxes. Run! But this is where we need leadership. Global leadership. People in each and every country, even North Korea, people in each and every country who are capable of saying who are capable of saying in a leaderly way, listen, folks, this is what we have to do. This is not something we can debate any longer. This is what we have to do. For example, the lack of leadership. Do you think the fires in Russia are out now? Do you think the oil is gone from the Gulf of Mexico? Do you think the huge icebergs have stopped breaking off of Iceland or Greenland or Yellowland or Redland or wherever they break? You think so? Those fires in Russia, they're all gone now? The air is breathable, right? Huh? The peat bog fires are still burning, but, you know, that's not big spectacular flames rising up skyward. That's stuff that's burning down and out. And releasing tons of what the British call methane gas, which is more of a global warming agent than CO2. But there's no leadership. Putin did his thing. He got aboard a C-130 equivalent or whatever it was, and pushed a button, and a bunch of water or something went shroom, and put out an area of Russian forest fire about the size of your bedroom. Way to go, Vlad. Somebody wants to disagree with me on the mosque issue? Oh, Christ. Sure. When we come back from the break. The mosque issue. While this is going on, we have subhuman freaks like, this is from last week, Bill O'Reilly saying that movie star Jennifer Aniston is destructive to society. And Dr. Laura is saying, well, I want my First Amendment rights again. I'm going to get out of radio and go on the internet so I can say the N-word. I get to say the N-word. We'll be back, and we'll find out what Glenn in Ontario, California wants to disagree with on the mosque issue. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, God.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Before the hour. All right, Glenn is in Ontario, California. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, Mike. I'm actually in Ontario, but...
Ontario, whatever. Canada. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Am I coming through okay?
Yes.
Oh, good. Last night, Mike, you said on the program that there was a 19 hijackers came to New York and attacked you, and I thought we were well past that... That nonsense of the official story of 9/11. There isn't any evidence those people were on the plane. Those 19. There's no evidence of Arabic names on the manifest at all.
Okay, look, I don't know. Wait a minute. Don't interrupt me. I don't know how to respond to that. I have a lot of doubts about what the official story is from September 11th, but I'm going with the 19. Hijackers. Okay, so all right. Now wait a second. If you want to be on the air on this program, you're going to have to allow me to stipulate that in my mind there were 19 hijackers. Now, who put them up to it? How the defenses of this country were reduced? Yada yada yada. That's very highly debatable. But if you want to be on this program, you're going to have to allow me to make my own stipulation, and that is that 19 hijackers, 15 of whom were Saudis. Flew airplanes into buildings in this country. End of that discussion. Now, if you want to talk about something else, go ahead.
Oh, nothing is bigger than that story ever since.
Okay. I tried three times to put you on hold, and you just don't get it. Okay? So go away. Again, I, the people that try to pigeonhole me as a 9/11 denier or something, you know, can kiss my grits. I've made my position very, very, very clear. I've also made position clear that it serves absolutely no purpose to sit here on this radio program and argue back and forth about things like the 19 hijackers didn't exist. As far as I am concerned, and again, I will stipulate for future discussion about this issue if you want to call in about it. And if you persist in bringing it up, I just get rid of you. I can't hang the program up on that one itsy bitsy point. If you want to talk, which, as far as I'm concerned, is not true. 19 hijackers did come to this country. They did commandeer airplanes. They did do their dirty work. Now, how they did it, with whose help and cooperation, whether it's the Bush crime family or members of the CIA or the DIA or whatever, you know, that is completely open for discussion. How the buildings came down is completely open for discussion. And none of that in the official reportage do I believe. But the 19 hijackers, yeah, I'm afraid so. So spare me, okay? I just don't want to hang up the program with that issue. Faith is in Pittsburgh. Hello, Faith.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you? Are you happy?
Am I happy?
Well, after your last call, I don't think you'll object to me that much.
Okay.
I've called poor Kathy 3 times. First time I got cut off. I don't know what happened. You know, a satellite thing.
Right, right.
Second time I hung up.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching you on Malloy Vision, which I know you love and adore.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, man, she doesn't want to hear some funny story. He's in a serious mood. It's early in the morning.
Yeah.
And so I sent Kathy an email. I'm sure she liked getting that, too.
Yeah.
And then the chat room said, call back. So I called back a third time.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm telling you all that so that you'll, like, not hate me when I try to be funny. But I sent you an email, which I'm sure you took to heart, asking you if you'd seen, you know, The Onion, right?
Yes.
And they now do video news, you know, like news shows.
I haven't
like
seen
today.
I haven't. I haven't seen that yet. I look forward to seeing it.
Okay. Well, I wanted to tell you this one just because.
Okay.
You always talk about Glenn Beck. Okay, but the one of their, it just came up. I think maybe last week. But the name of the news segment is Victim in Fatal Car Accident, Tragically, Not Glenn Beck. I just have like a few little notes here. I saw this last week. But anyhow, a grisly death only Glenn Beck could have deserved occurred. And instead, unfortunately, it was this young woman. Her legs were shattered. She was pinned against an embankment. They interview a witness, and a witness said, I don't know if this is exactly correct, but he said something like, I heard screaming. I hoped it was Glenn Beck. Then they interviewed the ambulance driver who said, I ran over to the car. I wanted to make sure the victim was still breathing. Or see if it was Glenn Beck.
Well, you know, Faith, let me interrupt. I do appreciate The Onion very much. I really do. And I think that it sounds to me like somebody at The Onion has been listening to this program. I'm just kidding. Because I've made it very clear that I think America would be a better place if Glenn Beck would just go ahead and kill himself and, you know, follow in his family's tradition. Because Fox News will never turn him loose, no matter how many advertisers bail out. They have all the money in the world to keep him going. A, B, he's a hate monger. C, he wants to see violence in the United States. He's the type of person that any society would be better off without. Now, we don't have any rules in this country where we can eliminate people simply because they're noxious, toxic, and are detrimental to the society. We just can't do that for obvious reasons. Some societies do that, but not us. So the only honorable thing, and I've suggested this many times, is that when Glenn Beck does make his own decision to kill himself, that, and hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later, that he will do it on his program so that people will understand that this piece of human waste has finally stepped off this mortal coil and gone wherever good psychopaths go once they kill themselves. So, but that, I think that's all that needs to be said about that. Thanks, Faith. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. Have you ever heard of the blogger Conceptual Gorilla? We've quoted this particular person, he or she, several times on the program. And the guerrilla has one called Defeat the Right in 3 minutes, which I think bears repeating. He says it's really a catchphrase, a so-called magic bullet that sums up the Republican Party in such a nice, easy-to-grasp package. You better believe it. It's downright elegant in its simplicity. You want to know what the magic bullet is, don't you? Read on. You still got 2 minutes here. Right-wing ideology in a nutshell. Here it is. When you cut right through it, right-wing ideology is just dime store economics, intended to dress their ideology up and make it look respectable. You don't really need to know much about economics to understand it. They certainly don't. It all gets down to two simple words: cheap labor. That's their whole philosophy in a nutshell, which gives you a short and pithy catchphrase that describes them perfectly. You've heard of big government liberals? Well, they're cheap labor conservatives. Cheap labor conservative is a moniker they will never shake and never live down, because it's exactly what they are. You see, cheap labor conservatives are defenders of corporate America, whose fortunes depend on labor. The larger the labor supply, the cheaper it is. The more desperately you need a job, the cheaper you'll work. And the more power these corporate lords have over you. Now, if you are a wealthy elite, or a wannabe wealthy elite, like most ditto heads, your wealth, power, and privilege is enhanced by a labor pool forced to work cheap. Don't believe me? Let's apply this principle to see how many right-wing positions become instantly understandable. Cheap labor conservatives don't like social spending or our so-called safety net. Why? Because when you're unemployed and desperate, corporations can pay you whatever they feel like, which is inevitably next to nothing. You see, they want you over a barrel and in a position to work cheap or starve. That's why they don't like the safety net. Cheap labor conservatives don't like the minimum wage or other improvements in wages and working conditions. Why? These reforms undo all their efforts to keep you over a barrel. Cheap labor conservatives like free trade, you know, NAFTA, GATT, etc. Why? Because there is a huge supply of desperately poor people in the so-called third world who are over a barrel and will work cheap. Cheap labor conservatives oppose a woman's right to choose. Why? Unwanted children are an economic burden that put poor women over a barrel, forcing them to work cheap. Cheap labor conservatives don't like unions. Why? Because when labor sticks together, wages go up. That's why workers unionize. Seems workers don't like being over a barrel. Cheap labor conservatives constantly bray about morality, virtue, respect for authority, hard work, and other values. Why? So they can blame your being over a barrel on your own immorality or your lack of values or your poor choices. Cheap labor conservatives encourage racism, misogyny, homophobia, and other forms of bigotry. Why? Bigotry among wage earners distracts them and keeps them from recognizing their common interests as wage earners. Cheap labor conservatives. They really don't like prosperity. It is 10 before the hour on the Malloy program. It is 10 before the hour on the Malloy. I was just looking at something here. Never mind. Gordon is in Oklahoma City. Hey, Gordon.
Hey, Mike. Good talking to you, as always.
Hey, my pleasure.
This story about the mosque and the Muslim center in New York City reminds me of something that happened here in Oklahoma about 15 years ago.
Yeah?
And it's so parallel to it, it's just spooky. But there was a group of very prominent Muslims here in Oklahoma that decided to build a mosque in a very affluent community in the north part of, well, just north of Oklahoma City, community named Edmond. And, of course, as could well be expected, the Christians in that community just went berserk. Mm-hmm. And they, the group of businessmen, and most of them were physicians, were trying to build a mosque, and they tried this public relations program, and that wouldn't work because, you know, this is going to be a place where terrorists were going to be trained.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then they decided, well, that might be a little bit delicate. They decided to tone that down mm-hmm. because here's like one of the main promoters of this started the heart transplant program. In one of the hospitals here.
One of the.
And that might be. How would you like to be laying there and have him tinker around with your heart, you know, after you've been accused of all that? So they decided, well, they told it down and said, well, it's because you're going to be political. That's it. They're going to be political, and we don't want that in our community.
Mm-hmm.
But right down the road was one of the big ministers, and he was kind of popular in that area. And he was getting ready to run for governor.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's the hypocrisy right there. Ultimately, the Muslims decided not to build the mosque because they were just catching too much heat. But, you know, that hypocrisy was just wreaking. Mm-hmm. I think I'm not the only person that pointed that out to a lot of people here.
I'm not going to say agree or disagree, but do you feel basically the same as I do? Yesterday, I talked considerably about this thousand-year-old war between Christians and Muslims. It's, you know, it's longer than that, actually, but this millennial war that is now well into the second millennium of Christians and Muslims literally wanting to kill each other. Now, I realize that there are some instances where that appears not to be the case, but both of these religions insist and demand that belief in the essentials of their religion is the only true religion, and that everyone else, although the Christians don't use this word, but everyone else is an infidel. What the Christians tell you is that you cannot ever be with God unless you are a Christian. The Muslims tell you essentially the same thing. While they do recognize, the Muslims do recognize Jesus as a prophet and Moses as a prophet, they, you know what I'm saying. So this has been going on forever. And what I was talking about yesterday was the intransigence on the part of both religions. They will never, ever, ever come to any conclusion. Now, I'd like to hear disagreement on that. I'd like to hear someone say to me, well, not so, Mike. They will make their peace eventually, but I just don't see it happening. Do you?
No, I don't. For one thing, and I think the Muslims may have a point here, that Christianity is kind of a backdoor way of polytheism, and they are strongly opposed to polytheism.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, that's certainly true with the Catholic branch of Christianity. One of the things that used to fascinate me, I had a Southern Baptist grandmother who told me that Catholics prayed to graven images. Now, I didn't know what the hell she was talking about, but I remember her saying that, and she would use the Bible as an example of where you're not supposed to do that. And it finally started to dawn on me when I got a little bit older what she was talking about, because all the kids in the neighborhood I grew up, probably 80% of them were Catholic, Eastern European Catholics, and or Southern European Catholics, and they had this whole raft of people they could pray to, you know, Saint Anthony for this and the Holy Mother for that and Saint Teresa for this and Saint this for that and Saint that for this. And I used to think, well, my goodness, how it is. They do have all these gods because, you know, my grandmother's religion said only God could answer prayer. And I think you're right. I think that the Muslims probably see this as a polytheistic
murderous kind of religion that, that simply says if you don't believe what we believe, you're doomed. You're doomed forever. Right?
Well, yes, that's right. But, of course, the Muslims kind of go a little bit stricter with that because they see the whole concept of Christ being a part of God and the whole Trinity concept and all that. They consider that polytheism, too.
Mm. Wow.
So, you know, they've been talking, you know, how long it's been since the Crusades. And, you know, that's been, what, 700-800 years ago.
And more than that.
And they're still, you know, talking about that.
Mm.
And now with all of our, you know, tinkering around in the Middle East, well, that's going to, you know, push it on for the next 1,000 years. I don't see any solution myself.
I don't either. All right, Gordon, thanks, man. Thanks for checking in, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Take care, Mike.
You too. Take care. I just, I honestly, genuinely believe, and I know you know this from listening to the program, that one of the, if not the, most destructive forces in the history of the human race has been religion of any sort. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Your child has